Okay, well, welcome. This is episode 20 of Teach with Tech, and today we're here with Sarah Robbins, an instructor from Ball State University, also known as IntelliGirl. She was recently featured in an Indiana Student, Daily Student, I should say, article headlined, Teacher Uses Online Second Life for Classes. Students take classes interacting via cyberspace, or words to that effect. I guess there was a comma I didn't quite add in there. Anyway, and that's just one article. Looks like you've, Sarah, you've been in a number of things. The Chronicle of Higher Education and somewhere down in Texas. And I saw, of course, the Muncie paper.
And the New York Times and USA Today and all kinds of fun places. Yeah.
So yeah, we've got a big star here today of the cyberspace world here with us with Teach with Tech. And now, the subtitle of that article was Students Take Classes, comma, Interact Via Cyberspace. Now, that in itself, you know, not a moderately huge deal anymore. We've been, you know, having, I worked on the first online course here at IU back in 94, and even before then, there were, you know, people using email and such like to interact via cyberspace. But what she's doing, beloved audience, is different. It's a step ahead, step beyond, a little bit more than just using email or websites or even learning management systems like OnCourse, which we have here, or Blackboard or WebCT. She's using something, and this is a mouthful here, a massively multiplayer online role-playing game as her place of instruction, her delivery mechanism, or at least one of them. And it's specifically a program called Second Life. And this is pretty interesting, and that's why we have her here today. Though, of course, she's not actually here at all. She's up in Muncie, and I'm down here in Bloomington, joined together by the lifeline we call Skype. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I see on your blog that you've got like 7 presentations in the next week.
Yeah, we're calling it the IntelliTour 2007. I'm actually doing 12 conferences in 3 months this semester. So,
it's
quite the busy schedule. But and it's all because of the Second Life work. I mean, it's really a lot of people are interested in it and want to know more about it. And so, I'm doing a lot of campus training sessions and, of course, hitting a lot of academic conferences to present about the research I've done. The class that I taught last semester was actually my dissertation research. And this semester, I'm just teaching the class again. But let me back up a little bit
and
correct one thing that you've said. You called
one of many corrections, I'm
and
sure.
It's and it's a common mistake to call Second Life an MMORPG. And it's that G that really creates the problem. A lot of folks who've never been inside Second Life assume that it's going to be similar to Worlds of Warcraft, and in fact that, you know, you're going to have an avatar and there's going to be this immersive environment and you're going to log in and run missions and things like that, level up. And Second Life isn't like that, and I think that that's what makes it unique for education especially, is that it's literally a second life. So anything you can do in real life, you can do in Second Life. Run a business, drive a car, change your clothes, build a house, you know, start a club, all those kinds of things you can do. So it's actually most often referred to as a MUVE, M-U-V-E, a multi-user virtual environment. So sort of a broader category without the game implications to it.
Is this something like The Sims, which I'm sure people have seen on television?
Sort
the ads
of,
or something?
Except when you play The Sims, the other people in the world are characters created by the game. And in Second Life, all those other folks are actually other people. So you log in, you create an account, you get an avatar, which is a digital version of you. And you can, they're infinitely customizable. You can change your hair and change your body and change genders with a click. You can make your own clothes using Photoshop and uploading the textures to make your own clothes. So it's a very participatory environment. It's actually probably closer to a 3D immersive wiki than it is a game, because everything in Second Life is user created. Linden Lab, who runs Second Life and owns it, they create land, and that's it. Everything else in the world is created by other users, and users retain the intellectual rights to anything they create, which was important for me, too. I didn't want to take my students into an environment where their work would become the property of someone else.
Sure.
That's important, and so in Second Life, you retain the rights to everything that you make.
So is I wonder, you know, that word games. I wondered about that. Is that a problem in terms of you know, other instructors perceiving this as it's just a game they're playing. It's not academically rigorous. Have you had any, you know, questions about whether or not this is a real class, anything like that?
That's a great question. A lot of the talk that I do is to dispel that myth. There's a couple of layers to that myth. One is that the perception of something as just a game. I think there's a false binary set between play and work. That work can be playful and play can involve work. Work meaning learning something.
Yeah.
You know, kids learn through play all the time. I mean, that's how we socialize little kids, is by having them pretend and play. And there's no reason why that kind of learning has to stop at a certain age. Adults can learn that way too. And so while Second Life may be perceived as being sort of a fluff environment, you know, because there's a lot of socializing going on, there's a lot of fashion and things like that, there's also a lot of rigorous stuff happening there. There are libraries, there are lots and lots of universities in Second Life, probably over 100 universities now.
Wow.
They either have an official presence in Second Life, or it's just one instructor experimenting, you know, doing research or something like that. But lots and lots of educators. So because it's an environment that is whatever you make it, we have an opportunity to sort of shape the spaces that we use inside Second Life to be more rigorous. But there is a lot of play. So long as you're able to make sure that those play opportunities are constructive, in that there's reflection and we look at them very critically and learn what we can from those play opportunities, there's a lot of chances to learn.
Now, many people listening to this, we haven't talked about what you teach yet, maybe thinking, okay, well, this is probably, oh, one of those educational technology courses, or this is
no.
Some multimedia design, you know, this is something that the kids going in are going to be really, you know, the classic geeks that are, you know, spending all their time, you know, in World of Warcraft or whatever outside of class. But this isn't. You're not teaching a course like that.
No, it's certainly well suited to those topics. But my class is a freshman composition course. It's a second semester required comp class at Ball State. There are about 100 sections of this course offered per year. And it's a rhetoric and academic research course. So in a lot of campuses, freshman composition is literature and writing. But at Ball State, it's rhetoric and writing. So we don't read poetry and short stories. Instead, we do rhetorical analysis, and we get into that side of communication. So what my students are doing in Second Life is mostly ethnographic and participant observation type research, and then writing about it. So we use Second Life as the community in which we research, and that enables us to talk about digital identity, and not just in Second Life, but also in MySpace and Facebook and other places where the students are forming those digital identities. It enables us to talk about visual rhetoric of avatars, because, like I said, the avatars are fully customizable. So when you see someone's avatar, when you see their character, for lack of a better word, you know that everything about them is intentional. They've put that hair on, they've dressed a certain way, And because that's all intentional, we can read other people's avatars like a text, and we can perform rhetorical analysis on those avatars and then interview them to see whether or not our assumptions are true. We can become parts of communities like subcultures inside Second Life and observe their traditions and their objects that they consider important to their community. And it gives us kind of the whole world in this microcosm of a very engaged community in which most of the residents are very open to teaching other people about what's important to them. So my students are able to go in there and talk to folks that they never would have access to any other way and get really great information from them. And then in the papers that they write as a result of that are just, they're fantastically insightful.
So you have them actually interacting with residents of Second Life that are not part of the class.
Right.
Class members.
And that's a big benefit. So a lot of the universities that I talk to who are considering moving into Second Life, if it's just for one class or they're trying to build a campus presence, they initially talk about, well, how can I sort of create a walled garden? Because they read the press about Second Life and they find out, well, there's a lot of adult content, there's a lot of dance clubs, you know, there's a lot of distraction there. And so they want to create a space where they know their students will be quote-unquote safe. But I've gone quite the other route. My theory is that we don't sequester students to dorms on campus. And even though Muncie is a small town, there's certainly things in the city that, you know, may not be beneficial to students to go and interact with. but so I teach them that this is a community that they are now part of, and they're part of the community as a resident, as someone who contributes to this world, and also as a researcher. And so by closing my students off to just themselves, it takes away all of the benefits that Second Life offers. So not only do my students leave our classroom space and go out into the larger community, but lots of community members come to our space and they observe class, they sit in on class, even participate in class.
Wow.
They pair up with my students to do research. We've paired students up with students from other classes at other universities who are studying similar topics so they could do research together. And so the community, educators, and the class sort of all work together in this great model. So it's almost like service learning in a way, in that they are part of a greater community outside of the classroom.
That's really fascinating. The only thing that I've been involved in somewhat, this even vaguely similar to this, was a couple of projects in Active Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And those were always closed off universes, even when, you know, they were always very separate. And as a consequence to that, you'd go there and there always, almost always never be anybody there.
Right.
Or one lone student working on something.
Right.
And, you know, so you'd have a lot of work we put into these things. And they did like, a Mars universe, and they did a simulation. They built a simulation of a PC that you could walk through.
Mm-hmm.
And, molecules of whatever. But it was just like an empty museum whenever I would
Right.
go in.
Right.
And it seemed, so what you've got is really something different than those projects I've seen in Active Worlds.
I'm trying to sort of rebel against the idea that learning only happens in privileged spaces. When you teach face-to-face on campus, at higher ed level anyway, you have access to a classroom for maybe 3 hours a week when your students meet there to hold class. And so students start to get the perception that learning can only happen in that space, as if it's some kind of privileged space.
Sure.
And they leave class, and maybe they do some homework, and they might talk to a classmate about an assignment, but it's very limited. And so what Second Life gives us is this persistent learning space. It's always there. We have an island, which is 16 virtual square acres in Second Life, and the students have dorm rooms there. They have a place to live. We have a sandbox where they can build items and objects and develop things like that for the space, and lots of other kind of like social meeting spaces and stuff in our island. And that space is always there. And the students know that they can use it for whatever they like. If they want to come in and meet with fellow students to talk about an assignment specifically, they can do that. But they may also log in just to have fun, just to do something that they enjoy doing. Last semester, one of my students hosted a Halloween party on our island. And I had no problem with that. It was a Pirates versus Ninjas party. And it was great. And it got lots of people from outside the class into our space. It informed them about what the students were doing because they asked questions while they were there. And so it makes it a space that reinforces the idea that learning happens everywhere, that it doesn't just happen in the classroom. And it doesn't have to happen at the hand of an educator, an instructor. You can teach yourself. And so what I try to do is create environments in which my students can learn, and then I let them take the wheel. And so they create spaces in which they can learn what they need to learn, and I'm just there to sort of facilitate.
The guide on the side.
Right. I think of myself as a travel guide, really. You know, I mean, I've been in this space a lot longer than they have, and so I know, you know, the best places to go. I know all the hot spots that you don't want to miss. But after that, I want them to forge their own paths, find new things, and bring them back to the group and teach us about what they've learned.
So do you, like, sit around a virtual fire and, you know, meet a certain number of hours a week?
Well, the way the class is organized right now is on Tuesday nights we meet in a face-to-face classroom. And those nights are basically the traditional class. We learn about a skill that we need to apply. So let's take, for example, interviewing. We'll meet on a Tuesday night. We'll talk about interviewing. We'll talk about how to write good questions, how to find someone interesting to interview, how to approach them and earn their trust, how to present yourself as a researcher. And then on Thursday night, we meet on Middletown Island, which is our island in Second Life, if anybody who's listening wants to check it out. Great. All one word, Middletown. And I call it our running amok night. So we meet in this little gazebo on our island, which is kind of the designated meeting space. And I say, okay, this is the assignment for tonight. You're going to go and you're going to find someone to interview. You're going to ask them at least 4 questions, and you're going to make a log of the conversation. And then we're going to come back here, you know, in a half an hour, 40 minutes or so, and we're going to compare the experiences that we had and learn from each other. So while they're doing that, there's also we're in a group, which is a way to organize people in Second Life. So we have a Middletown group, and we can do group instant messaging that no one else can read outside of our group. So when they leave the island and they go and spread out to find somebody to interview, we can all the time be talking on this back channel in this group IM. So if a student gets into trouble, like, wow, I ask a question and she's not answering, we can all run to their assistance in this IM and go, you know, well, ask her a further question, or ask her if she's offended by the question, and sort of help them like a bug in their ear.
Oh.
And so it creates this very dynamic learning environment.
Wow.
And we've also done projects like, another benefit of Second Life is that you can build objects in Second Life. If you go into one of your typical immersive environments, like I just keep using World of Warcraft as an example, all of the items in the world are generated by the game itself. You can't decide that you want that specific armor, but you want to turn it pink. You don't have that choice.
Right.
In Second Life, since everything is user created, there's this fantastic building option. And so it's like having a bottomless box of Legos, basically.
Wow.
So my students have done projects where they've written a research paper, they've made an argument, they've got a thesis statement, they've got evidence to back it up, they've got sources, all the traditional, you know, things that we want students to learn in a writing course. Then they come into Second Life and they build a visual representation of their argument. So they're repurposing the same material in a new media. Last semester, they did research into issues of higher education. This was their topic. And one group wanted to talk about the cost of higher ed and what students, what people who don't go to college spend that money on instead. And they found through surveys with a lot of people that one of the major purchases people spend money on right after high school is a new car.
Mm-hmm.
So they built a large set of scales, you know, like the weights and measure type scales. And on one side, they put a diploma, and on the other side, a car. And the scales tipped back and forth. You could watch them actually move. And when you clicked on it, you got this little text document that explained the research. explained the statistics of what they were able to learn. And so you had the text there, but you also had this visual representation of the argument. And when we built a large kind of campaign center for all of these arguments that they had done, and we had an open house, and about 300 people came, 300 residents from Second Life came
Wow.
over a span of a few hours and engaged with the students, asked them questions about what they had argued in their papers, asked them questions about their research, and really engaged them with very intelligent questions about what they had done. Now, I couldn't make that happen in regular life.
Sure. So they
I
really.
there's no way I could attract 300 people to a freshman comp open house, you know.
Yeah.
But in Second Life we did it, and it was awesome.
So that is so an authentic environment, an authentic task. And so was the motivation of the students increased by this sort of a, instead of just handing you a paper, they actually had a real audience for their work?
Absolutely. They're not riding into a black hole, you know. I'm very interested in having them deal with all aspects of a rhetorical situation. So they have to decide who the ideal audience is for their writing and what the appropriate tone would be, how to be persuasive. And so in Second Life, we have this huge audience that they can address their writing to, and they can be very specific about a certain group of people in there, or they can be more general, you know, like all Second Life residents. But no matter who they pick, they have a certain base of information for that audience. They know certain things about them, and it lets them write more targeted arguments, but also authentic arguments, because they know they can distribute that writing to that audience if they want to. We could publish a newspaper in Second Life and put it in a box where you go and you put the coins in and you get a newspaper out. We could put our writing in the form of a newspaper, put it in a box like that, and distribute it all over the world. We could keep track of how many people read it. We could get comments and feedback from folks who have read it. And so it's sort of like a blog or a website built into the environment. You know, we get that sort of feedback and comments if we want. And so yeah, it is a very authentic learning space.
Now, is the communication you mentioned, instant messaging, is it all going on via text or is there also audio?
Right now, the system itself supports only text. So you have out loud text chat, you have instant messages with groups, instant messages with an individual if you want, and there's also text in the form of what they call note cards, which are small text documents that you can hand out or that can pop out of an object when you interact with it. So folks who are doing voice in Second Life right now are using third-party software like Vivox, Ventrilo, TeamSpeak, even Skype. But sometime this summer, and it's in beta testing right now, there's going to be voice chat support built into Second Life. There's going to be voice instant messaging, so you can voice with just one specific person, even at a distance. And there's also going to be spatial voice chat, so anyone within a set distance from you in the virtual environment will be able to hear you talk.
Oh, that's
It's going to
interesting.
change everything.
Yeah. Well, it might, and maybe, I don't know, maybe not even for the better. You mentioned in the article that I read that students write more in this online
Yes.
environment than in face to face. And
Yes.
obviously that will cut into the writing necessarily,
Yeah,
I would think.
because they have to type their answers to questions and their responses in discussion, I think they're thinking more about how they phrase how they feel rather than just kind of blurting something out.
Yeah.
And because they can type over each other, I see an amazing level of engagement and contribution in a discussion. So if we meet, you know, just for a few minutes at the end of class, we generate this huge text log because everybody can talk at once. Voice is definitely going to change that. They won't be able to talk over each other anymore. They won't be able to, they won't be, they'll be less inclined to really think through their answers to a question or a discussion. But voice is going to be optional. So, you know, I can say, well, during this part of class, we're going to use the voice, but during that part of class, we're not. And I can turn it off
Oh,
in our space.
well, that's
So,
good.
yeah, but it's going to change the environment a lot because it will be optional. And so folks who own land will be able to say, well, I'm going to enable voice here or I'm not. And so people who want to voice chat will be more drawn to the places that support it versus others. And in any space where you have sort of a level of anonymity and role-playing, because there are a lot of people in Second Life who are role-playing, whether it's in a game sort of setting, you know, playing a character, or maybe they're just experimenting with an alternate identity, voice chat, you can't really fake. So if you're in there as a female avatar and you're really a male, people are going to know that when you voice chat, you know. So it's going to change the way people use it.
So do you meet face-to-face at all with your students?
I do, once a week.
How have they been reacting to this new environment?
Well, because we don't have a computer lab in the English department that can support Second Life, it is pretty hardware intensive. My students use their own computers on Thursday nights to log in. So on Friday nights, you know, we meet in a classroom and we meet face to face. So the demographic of the class is interesting. These are people who are already online a lot. They may be gamers already, or they may be interested in online social networking. And so what I've observed from the kind of student who wants to take this class is that the environment really isn't intimidating to them. They've been in similar environments before. Uh-huh. So while they may have to learn the mechanics of this specific environment, being in a 3D virtual environment isn't too strange. When I've done training with other educators who are less familiar with these kind of environments, there is a pretty steep learning curve. They have to get used to the mechanics of the space. And I usually compare it to like a roller coaster, you know. The ride up the hill is kind of slow and arduous, but when you get to the top, you know, everything else is going to be fun. Like it's a fast ride down and there's lots of loop-de-loops and great times to be had. So I usually do a one class boot camp sort of at the beginning of the semester to walk the students through all the basic skills to make sure they know how to really make use of the environment. And then after that, they do it on their own.
Well, we're back, and I was just wondering, I know that there'll be a lot of people listening to this, college instructors and maybe even some high school instructors who are interested, intrigued, but perhaps a little intimidated. What's the best way? How do we get started with this? How do we baby step into using a system like Second Life?
The most important thing about getting started is to not be afraid of it. It is a very unusual environment from if you're used to Blackboard or WebCT. You know, this is not a text-only learning management system that you might be used to. So first of all, everybody was a newbie at one point. Everybody's made mistakes. So don't be afraid to just jump in and experiment, walk around, and get used to the space. You want to go to secondlife.com and download the client, and it's available for PC, Mac and Linux. Download the client, you create an account. It is free. So unless you decide that you want to purchase land or you want to purchase the in-world currency, which is called a Linden, it is a absolutely free service. So download the client and jump in. Go through Orientation Island, which is where you'll be spawned the first time. It'll teach you all of the basic skills about how to get around, how to talk to people, how to change the appearance of your avatar, and just experiment, and above all, have fun. You know, you can't break it, you know. So there's no reason to be intimidated by it. And absolutely feel free to contact me. I'm IntelliGirl Tully in Second Life, and it's very easy to search for another person and send an instant message, and I'm more than happy to help. And there's also a really active mailing list for Second Life educators called the SLED, S-L-E-D, SLED list. There's over 1,000 educators on that mailing list.
Wow.
It's very active, like I said, and lots of folks who are more than happy to help someone who is new and walk you through the basic skills and get you up to speed. There are lots of campuses where you can go and observe things that are going on. Like I said, my class meets on Thursday nights at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. You're welcome to come and observe a class, even if you just want to sit quietly in a corner and soak it all in. You're more than welcome to do that. And so make use of the community and just sort of hop in and try it out.
Great. Well, I'll include that URL and your blog and even your course, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So they can take a look at that. The website she's got up for that is very nice. And it's interesting looking through the, you know, the goals and the objectives and all, you know. It really is, you know, there's not a mention of technology. And so, you know, I think that one of the nice things about this is that really you could teach virtually anything, you would think, using this technology. Have you, I mentioned briefly secondary schools. Have you heard of any high school teachers using?
There are a lot of high school teachers who are experimenting in Second Life, but to bring in students, and this is an important thing to know, if you're a K-12 teacher, your class would have to meet in the teen grid, which is a parallel universe in Second Life for 14 to 17-year-olds.
Oh, okay.
So if you're under 18, you're not allowed in what we call the main grid. You have to be 14 to 17, and then your students can be in that teen grid. And the only adults who are allowed in the teen grid are background-checked educators.
Okay, great.
So there's and it's very well-run, the teen grid is. Lots of rules and lots of people watching out for those teenagers to make sure that there aren't adults over there who shouldn't be there. And the teens themselves self-police very well. They don't really want adults over there interfering with their world. So the projects that are going on over there, like Global Kids, which you can look up, that's run by Barry Joseph, really fantastic programs for K-12 educators to get involved in. But you need to start in the main grid and get your feet wet and learn what's going on, and then get in contact with folks who are working in both grids. And then you can get into the teen grid and bring students in and experiment. And all the same tools are there in the teen grid as are in the main grid.
Great. Well, I'm glad I asked about that, because we have a lot of K-12 teachers. And also my online students. Hopefully they'll check that out. I have a course using the internet in the K-12 classroom. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully they'll check that out too. Well, I know you've got a lot of presentations to get to. and we're just at that usual about time to sign off time. So I want to thank you again. And that was Sarah Robbins we've been talking to from Ball State University. And hopefully you'll get it, you know, check out what she's doing in Telegirl, as she's known as.
That's me.
So, well, hey, this is Chris Essex, and this was Teach With Tech. The blog, as always, is http://teachwtech.blogspot.com. And again, you'll find all the URLs that we mentioned here, links to everything that Sarah's doing for you to check out. And thanks again, and that's it for Teach With Tech.